to Frequency Matters, the RF and Microwave Update series. I'm Pat Hindle, and I'm here with my longtime co-host, Kristen Anderson. Welcome back to the show, and welcome back to Horizon House.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's so great to have you back, and you're, if people don't know, you're now doing the day-to-day operations for the new contract that we've won, which is the IEEE MTTS International Microwave Symposium. So we're back to doing that exhibition, and it can't be better than to have you on board.
Thank you. It's a job that's familiar to me. I enjoy it.
Well, hopefully we can have the event in person next year in Atlanta in June. Hopefully we can see everybody.
That's what it's all about.
As you can see, we're back here with our annual beach episode here on Plum Island in Newbury, Massachusetts. It's actually works out very well that we can avoid the COVID situation by being spaced out and being outdoors.
Yeah.
So in this episode, we're going to continue our coverage of the August Test and Measurement Trends issue. As a reminder, the cover feature is written by QuadSat in Denmark, and they discuss a new way of testing satellite antennas using drones. So very good way to save a lot of money on testing large satellite systems that have to be moved around. They can just go fly over with the drone and do an easy measurement. So we covered the technical features in the last episode. So how about products? What do we have for product features?
Well, I'm not as fluent as you, so I'm going to check my notes on the product features. I see that we're covering an article by Carlisle Interconnect Technologies on cable dielectric that minimizes phase change over temperature. And also an article by LPKF covering single-step processing of plated GaN substrates. How about tech briefs?
So for tech briefs, we had three of them. We had a 1200-watt LDMOS transistor. It's produced by Amplion and distributed by RFMW, who's one of our sponsors. We also had rugged, versatile GaN PAs from Kuhn Electronics in Germany. And finally, we had very flexible, very low-loss cable assemblies to 67 gigahertz from Samtech. So a nice array of products.
Good.
So recently, IMS 2020 finished up their virtual event, the first ever IMS that was virtual.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on the event?
Well, first of all, I have to say I was truly impressed with the 2020 show management team, whether from the IEEE, the society, or from the steering committee, or the local show management group of people. But to put together the virtual program in the short amount of time that they had to do it, was a gargantuan
tremendous feat. Effort, yeah.
I can't believe it was even possible. So they deserve our respect for all that they accomplished. Second, I'd like to say that personally, I really enjoyed the platform that the virtual event was on. I found that it was a combination of three things that we all know and love: webinars, social media, and shopping, right? So we're comfortable learning and teaching in a webinar environment now. We've been doing that for a while. But everyone who attended the show, whether they were an exhibitor or a delegate, they had a profile with a picture, a description of themselves, and we could interact with each other on that platform about what we were there to do. That was fantastic. And then on the exhibition side, so it was like shopping. You could find the exhibitors that you wanted to visit. You could go to their booth, if you will, in the platform and visit with the exhibitor. On that note, I think it's worth pointing out, we did get some feedback, we experienced it ourselves, that a lot of people were not comfortable coming into the booth. I don't want to say they weren't comfortable. A lot of people didn't come into the booth. And I think maybe they weren't comfortable. It almost might have seemed like they were interrupting something when they clicked through that link. Did it say join meeting or something?
Join virtual booth.
Yeah, so to get into a booth, it might have felt like, oh, I don't want to interrupt anything. So maybe that was why. Also, maybe there wasn't enough information on the exhibitor's front page, which wasn't in the booth yet, to say why come in the booth. You know, almost like we gave them too much information up front. They could just take what they wanted and go. So I think going into future years, hopefully this never happens again, but if it does, I think we have some thoughts in mind on ways that we can maybe campaign ahead of time to get people comfortable with what to do to get in the booth, to feel comfortable moving in the booth.
Yeah, and now it's more of a way of life, so we're used to virtual things.
Yes. Yes, but let's truly hope this doesn't happen again.
Definitely. And so the editors were there and we visited a lot of the booths. There were about 200 companies with virtual booths.
Yep.
And we wrote up about 40 of them doing their product highlights. So that's on our website. You can check that out.
Yep.
There were some significant collaborations that I wanted to go over that were very interesting. We had Rodin Schwartz and TSN Systems developing a comprehensive timing, precise measurement system for automotive applications. They're down to nanosecond accuracy. We also had Keysight, and they were doing interoperability testing for ORAN with a partner in China. NI was teaming up with Ada Wireless, and they are offering the first fully digital envelope tracking system for millimeter wave 5G front ends, so that's very interesting. And then on the component side, we had ADI and Intel teaming up together to deliver a whole 5G platform. So now it makes it easy for people to implement a low-cost, efficient solution. So that's very enabling.
All that came out of the virtual event.
Yeah, and there's even more. I had a couple more was Minicircuits teaming up with Mouser. For the first time, Minicircuits is offering parts through distribution in the whole history of their company. And we talked to Ted Heil. He said that's going very well. He's actually expanded the number of parts that are being distributed through Mouser. Finally, we had Anoki Wave and HiSky teaming up together to deliver next generation low-cost SATCOM terminals. And those are for various applications. So excellent collaborations going on. I love to see that going on in the industry. It really helps enable technology faster than it could do it by themselves.
True, makes good sense.
So we'll turn our attention to IMS 2021
that
you're working on now, which is in Atlanta next June. And certainly hope to do that in person, but if not, we'll figure out a way to get around it.
Well, what's interesting is that I understand the show managers are exploring with the steering committee a way to make the 2021 event a hybrid event. So there could be a virtual component to it, even if we are live.
Right. This could be a permanent way of doing business.
Which is fantastic. I like it because you're available to it around the clock. It's not just on the schedule of the show week, you know. But for 2021, show management has been working hard on all the different elements of the show. My field is the exhibition side. And right after the 2020 virtual event, we started right away to assign booth space, you know, working with exhibitors one by one on where they want to be located on the show floor. And I'm glad we were able to start that up right away, because I think between the event being virtual this year and the transition to show management, a lot of exhibitors were wondering what's going on and when, and they didn't want to be lost or forgotten. So I did want to take this opportunity just to say that we did get the exhibitor list from the IEEE. It's the list of the show. So we're working with the official list of companies that exhibit every year. And we are working in priority number order, which is the way it's been done for decades. Just in this virtual way, it's a little slower than we had hoped. So
where do you stand today with exhibitor selection?
We are currently at exhibitor number 170. We have another 450 or so to meet with, or to, you know, and there's a process of inviting, getting the RSVP, making sure they got our communications. No one's going to be forgotten. We are working through the list. It's going to take a few weeks. I did want to also mention that the Georgia World Congress Center is well prepared. They're already open. So they have the state's regulations published on the Convention Center website, which is gwcca.org. And they have their COVID response and strategy also with a link on their homepage. So I just encourage everybody who's thinking about attending the show next year to keep that website in mind and keep looking at it to plan your trip and to plan your presence.
Yeah, you can go there and see what's going on to make yourself comfortable or not.
Yeah, the safety measures, they're great. It's well organized. It's easy to locate what you're looking for. A nice frequently asked questions page. So again, that's the Convention Center website. Just for that kind of information, it's great.
And so I wanted to remind everybody that EDICON Online is taking place in October on each Tuesday of the month. And so you can go and sign up now. Registration is open. It's free for everybody.
Wow.
And it also is, you're eligible for IEEE credits, continuing education units, if you take these courses and sessions.
Wow.
We have over 40 sessions planned, so it should be a great event. And it'll be on demand afterwards, too.
Wow, that's great.
So I think that about wraps it up. Our sponsors for this episode are RFMW, a premier RF and microwave distributor. And our other sponsor is Wireless Telecom Group, and they're made up of the brands including Booten, Comgility, Microlab, Noisecom, and Halsworth. And they do everything from components to systems to instruments. We thank everybody for watching us, and remember that frequency matters.